say these words. We confess these words. He ascended into heaven and is seated at the right hand of the Father, and he will come again to judge the living and the dead. He will come again to judge the living and the dead. These are words about the second coming of Jesus. It's something as old as the oldest writings in the New Testament. It's something ingrained in our Christian theology since the very beginning of the church. It's part of this ancient Apostles' Creed we confess. But the second coming of Jesus is also something we Lutherans, we don't talk about a whole lot, and probably a lot of Lutherans don't think about at all. But we believe as Christians that at the end of history, Christ will come again. As I said when I lit the candle, it's interesting that we begin the season of Advent, this time of looking back 2,000 years ago when Jesus did come, to looking forward to that unknown day in the future when we confess that Christ will come again. But this time he will not come as a baby in a manger. This time he will come as the king and judge, the ruler of all the world. And this time everybody is going to know he is coming. This, we confess in, is actually the second Christmas. But on the second Christmas, people will not be singing, "What child is this?" is a question. On the second Christian, all the world will sing, "Whoa, look at this! It's Jesus, it's the King, it is amazing!" Because you see, our theology of the second coming of Jesus is a big deal. The Bible is very clear about that. And the Bible is also very clear about something else when it comes to the second coming of Jesus, and it's this: that nobody knows when it's going to happen. Nobody. Not even Jesus knew when it was going to happen. We are talking 100% surprise here. Now, the idea of this Advent, this coming, it goes back to Jesus, and it even goes back to a time before Jesus. Jesus talks about this several times in the Gospels, such as our text for today, this mysterious event. But it's interesting that Jesus never clearly tells his disciples, "I'm the one who's going to come again." He never says it in those words. He always talks about this mysterious figure he called the Son of Man. So who is the Son of Man? Well, it's a phrase that actually appears in the Old Testament. Sometimes the phrase Son of Man in the Old Testament just means a person. The prophet Ezekiel repeatedly refers to himself as Son of Man. But in the Old Testament book of Daniel, in one of those weird and mysterious visions for which Daniel is so well known, this is the vision about the four beasts, the winged bear, the winged lion, a bear that has three tusks, the one with four wings and four heads, and one with 10 horns and iron teeth. You know that familiar story. In this vision of these four mysterious beasts, the prophet Daniel declares these words: "And I saw one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. And he came to the Ancient One, the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and kingship, so that all the peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not pass away, and his kingship is one that shall never be destroyed." The Son of Man in Daniel is quite the guy. And the image of the Son of Man coming in power and judgment on the clouds of heaven was a very popular one in Jewish theology in the time when Jesus was alive. If you're not aware of it, Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man. It's one of his favorite ways of talking about himself. The most famous of all the verses where he talks about the Son of Man is in Mark chapter 10, where Jesus says, "For the Son of Man, me, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." But Jesus also talked about this mysterious Son of Man who would come in the future to bring judgment upon the world. In Mark chapter 13, it's a chapter we're going to talk about in the adult forum today, if this is rousing your curiosity at all, he talks about the coming of this strange figure called the Son of Man. He said, "And then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds." He quotes directly from Daniel 7. with great power and glory. And then he will send out angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heaven. So who is this Son of Man? Well, Jesus never clearly spells out who it is. Is it him? Is it someone else? But Jesus seems to have known of an intimate connection between himself and this Son of Man who would come. But then he wants his disciples to know something, because they want to know, well, when's this going to happen, Jesus? What are the signs that the Son of Man is coming? And Jesus tells them, but of that hour and of that day, nobody knows, not even this Son, but only the Father. That's part of our gospel text today when Jesus says, for as of that hour and day, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but from the Father. But we do know this. From the very beginning of our Christian faith, Christians have believed that Jesus, the one who died, who was raised, who ascended into heaven, that he would come again. And we also need to know this, that the very first Christians thought this would happen very soon. Very, very soon. In his letter that we call 1 Thessalonians, which is probably the oldest Christian writing in existence, in his letter to the church in Thessalonica, Paul says this about this soon expected return of Jesus. He writes, "For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so through Jesus God will bring with him those who have died. For this we declare to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive," Paul seems to believe he would be alive when Christ returned, "we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will by no means precede those who have died." And he continues to write, "For the Lord himself, with the cry of command, with the archangel's call, and with the sound of God's trumpet, will descend from heaven, and the dead in Christ will rise first. And then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up in the clouds together with them and meet the Lord in the air. And so we will be with the Lord forever." This is what Paul wrote at the beginning of his ministry. But later in his ministry, when Christ had not returned, Paul's letters start to think that maybe, perhaps, I won't be here. In some of his earlier letters, Paul says such things as, if you're not married, don't get married, because Christ is going to come back soon and you have other things to think about. But later on, his language starts to shift a little bit. And in our text from Romans chapter 13, Paul says this. He says, "We do not live to ourselves, and we do not die to ourselves. So if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. So whether we live or die, we are the Lord's." Later in this ministry, it seems as if Paul said, well, perhaps I won't be alive when this happens, but whenever it happens, we know we belong to the Lord. Well, it's 2,000 years later, and Christ has not returned. And I think we Christians living in the 21st century, we have to admit that those very first Christians who expected the imminent return of Jesus, they got it wrong. He didn't come then. So 2,000 years later, why do we still say he will come again to judge the living and the dead? You know, it's very easy to lose sight of this confession of faith as life creeps in day by day by day. And the second coming of Jesus, as I said, is something that a lot of Christians don't think about. But there are many Christians who are absolutely fixated on the second coming of Jesus. They think about it all the time. They preach about it all the time. They talk about it all the time. They write about it all the time. One of the most famous of these Christians is a guy named Hal Lindsey, who's been writing books since the 1960s on the second coming of Jesus. His first one, this came out when I was in middle school. It's called The Late Great Planet Earth, as he spells out everything going on in the world back in the 1960s that spelled out the imminent return of Jesus. Hal Lindsey has sold tens of millions of books through the years. He's still on TV today, still preaching about the imminent second coming of Jesus. And there's one thing you need to know about Hal Lindsey, and it's this. He's never been right about anything. Nothing. When it comes to predicting the second coming of Jesus, he is oh for everything. But yet he continues to preach and to teach and to sell millions of books because people want to believe that Christ is coming now. in my time to wrap everything up. And it's nothing unique to our age today. We need to know that. Back in 1843 in New York State, there was a man named William Miller who said he had figured out all those mysterious prophecies in Daniel and Revelation. And he knew that Jesus was going to return on a certain day in October 1843. And thousands of people sold everything they had and they went to the mountaintop, the hilltop in New York State, to await the second coming of Jesus. And the day in October of 1843 came and no Jesus. And William Miller announced, oh, my math was off, I forgot to carry the one. And he's coming next year in 1844. And so in 1844, thousands of people, not quite as many as the first time, they sold everything they have, they went to the hilltop in New York State to await the coming of Jesus. And you guessed it, he didn't come then. But that doesn't keep people from trying to figure it out. The Jehovah's Witnesses, the folks who knock on your door sometime, they have predicted the second coming of Jesus in 1914, in 1929, and in 1975. Some of you remember, it was just 6 years ago, the Harold Camping, this guy who was on the radio, his followers predicted the world would end, what was it, in May of 2011? And when it didn't happen, they moved it back to October of 2011. And just last year, there was a big movement about Christ returning in 2015 because it had something to do with what they called, I had to write it down so I say it right, the Shemitah year, something about Jewish calendars. We keep forgetting that no one knows when this is going to happen. If Jesus didn't know, who are you and I to think we can figure it out? So if we don't know when it's going to come, why do we bother talking about it? That's a good question to ask. And I think there are two very important reasons why you and I need to constantly keep in our minds this Christian theology that Christ will come again. The first one is this. Jesus didn't tell us when it would happen, but Jesus did tell us in no uncertain terms how we need to live as we wait for that unknown day to happen. You see, we Christians, we're not supposed to spend all of our time trying to decipher what's going to happen. That's not our job. Instead, we are to live as though today could be the day when Christ comes back. This is what Paul writes in that letter to Romans, the passage we heard today from Romans 13. Besides this, he writes, you do not know what time it is, how it is now the moment for you to awake from sleep. For salvation is nearer to us than when we became believers. The night is far gone and the day is near. The time is coming. It's getting closer, says Paul. So how should we live? And he tells us. He says, just wait a second here. Quieter? Good. He says, let us lay aside the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us live honorably as in the day. We don't know when this day is coming, but Paul says we know how to live as we await. We live each day walking in the light of Jesus Christ. We live each day battling sin and immorality, because immorality is not befitting Christians. That's why Paul says we put aside drunkenness, we put aside licentiousness, we put aside all those things that only gratify the flesh, that only destroy relationships. And he says this, one of Paul's favorite phrases for faith. He says, put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provisions for the flesh to gratify its desires. How are we to live as Christians as we await this unknown day? Paul says we are to wrap ourselves up in Jesus Christ as we wrap ourselves up in our favorite blanket or our comfy robe. We are to be engulfed by the love of Jesus Christ. And Jesus also says this. He says that we are to be on guard. We are to be awake. We are to live each day ready that this might be the day when he will return. That's why Jesus told all those stories. The story about the wise and the foolish bridesmaids, who either were on guard and had enough oil for the bridegroom when he's delayed, or not. That's why Jesus told stories about servants who, when the master's gone, are you going to be doing your jobs or are you going to be, you know, goofing off when the master comes? That's why he tells stories about guards who need to be awake, who need to be vigilant, because you don't know when the enemy might come. I will say this, folks. I have absolutely no idea when Jesus Christ will return. Sorry to let you down, but I don't. It could be today. It could be tomorrow. It could be September 17th, 10,842 AD. It could be March 3rd, 1,388,202. I have no idea when Christ will return. But I do know this, that whenever that day comes, whenever our Lord does return, his followers, whether you and me today or our descendants generations from now, we need to be found doing the work he calls us to do. Because it is wise to do our master's work as we await his return. It's good, it's life-changing, it's holy, and it's profitable for us and for others. There's a second important reason why we need to remember and hold up this unknown day in the future, and it's this. Because you and I, we do not know how many days we have left on this earth. This past Tuesday was the 53rd anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy. It's a big day in my life because it's the moment of my youth that is seared into my memory. I was in second grade the day President Kennedy was killed. In fact, I took my very first spelling test on the day President Kennedy was killed. I have my spelling test from November 22nd, 1963. I took this spelling test in the morning. When I got back to school after lunch to correct the test, well, we all know what had happened by that time. I'm fascinated by President Kennedy's assassination, not in a morbid way, but in a historic way, because it affected me. And many of you, you know the same feeling, right? Those of you who were old enough to remember it. And there's one thing about that day that really hit me this week as I was working on my sermon. As I was watching those documentaries and watching the famous Zapruder film, as President Kennedy's limousine turns off Houston Street onto Elm Street, and he's innocently waving to the crowds, not knowing that he has only a few seconds to live. It's a powerful and a stark image that reminds us that we don't know how much time we have left on this earth. Now, when I say this, I don't mean to be a bummer. I don't mean to take the joy out of your Advent and Christmas, but it's something as Christians. If there's anyone who should talk about the reality of our mortality, it is Christians. We need to. I am 60 years old. I pray I have my mother's genes. And if I do, then maybe I've got another 30 years. But I don't know. None of us knows how many days we have. This first Sunday in Advent reminds us that life is short, life is fleeting, and our life in some ways is out of our control. Jesus only got 30 years on this earth, but he sure made the most of it, didn't he? We are called, each one of us, to live each and every day for Jesus Christ. Each and every day we are to share his love with others. Each and every other day we are to serve him by serving others in his name. Each and every day we are to follow his teachings and live as an example to others. Each and every day we are to hear his word and act upon it. Each and every day we are to share his word with others so they know about Christ as well. That's an important job, and it's not a job we can put off until tomorrow. Jesus says, "Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day the Lord is coming. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not let his house be broken into." We can't plan to live tomorrow for Jesus. We have to make sure we live today for Jesus. And if there's one thing you take away from the sermon today, I hope that's it. We have to make sure we live today for Jesus, because today is the only day that comes. Today we light one candle. Today our Advent journey begins. Today our waiting begins. But each day, you and I are to be of service as dedicated followers of Jesus Christ, the one who came and the one who will come again. And that gives each day we do have in this life of ours meaning, purpose, and value. as we serve the one who will come again to judge the living and the dead.